I'm speaking about relational knowledge, and I have to ask apologies for the translators to whom I think I gave quite a bit of a headache. My father was a Jew from Tunisia, and there is a saying in Judaism, it was a rabbi, a rav, Rabbi Yahu from Strasbourg, who said, when you come to a perfume shop, even if you buy nothing, you still go out with a smell. My guess is I gave you more to chew than what you could, especially just after a noon lunch. That's one of the reasons why it has been recorded. So you can play it back if you're interested. I'm writing a book on this subject in a narrative form, which is reviewed at least for the first kind of small half by NPH in the US. Hopefully to help, because I believe it's important things. Now I would like to take a little time to ask, because even if I speak a lot of that, have you noticed I'm quite strong on this one? How much data analysis I gave you? So let me try to be a recovering addict to objective knowledge. Yes, I'm working on it. Any questions, comments, observations about this afternoon session or the session of this morning? Chris, and then Mary. Yep. Yes.
So one of the things I think Ian, or did we do the dot? Eines der Dinge, die der Ian erwähnt hatte, kam mir auch zu Sinn, und zwar das wesleyanische Quadrilateral, das im Grunde sehr schön reinblendet, obwohl du darüber nicht explizit gesprochen hast. Ich glaube, für unsere Pastoren haben wir das alles so ein bisschen mitgehört. Was für mich wichtig war und nicht zu 100% rauskam, war, dass im Grunde jetzt nicht das Ziel ein Encounter ist. Also so ein bisschen klang das etwas so in deiner Präsentation, als würden wir jetzt hinbewegen uns, nachdem wir quasi Rationalismus hinter uns gelassen haben, Enlightenment durch sind, dass wir jetzt endlich wieder verstehen, es geht nicht nur darum, dass wir alles rationale Wesen sind, dass wir jetzt nicht einen kompletten Schwung hinlegen, nur zu Emotionalität oder zu persönlicher Begegnung, sondern dass das eben auch zu unserem Menschsein dazugehört. Yeah. Das heißt, es geht wirklich um die Balance, die hergestellt werden soll, auch in unserer Spiritualität.
Yeah. Balance is extremely important. We tend culturally to put objective knowledge as the key. And that as an assistant, we need to shift the balance from relational knowledge as the foundation, and objective knowledge as a servant to this relational knowledge. Does it make sense, Chris?
Ja, ich weiß nicht, ob ich dem zustimmen würde. Also, es klingt wie nur eine Weiterentwicklung, aber eigentlich hatten wir auch schon vor der Rationalität, also vor der Aufklärung, hatten wir ja auch schon viel Verständnis darüber, dass in Geschichten gedacht wird, dass Menschen ihre Welt und ihre Wahrheit im Grunde ohne objektive Wahrheit verstanden haben.
Yeah.
Und deswegen finde ich nicht unbedingt, dass es eine Weiterentwicklung ist, wenn wir uns nur dahin bewegen, sondern finde ich einfach, dass der Blumenstrauß bunter wird.
Yeah.
Also es ist für mich im Grunde Spiritualität eben auf allen verschiedenen Ebenen.
Yeah.
Und das ist ja jetzt gerade, ich meine, im Grunde ein dualistisches Weltbild, was du gezeichnet hast. Also obwohl du wegbewegen willst von Dualismus, ist das trotzdem, wie du es präsentiert hast, ein dualistisches Weltbild. Auf der einen Seite objektive Knowledge, auf der anderen Seite relational Knowledge. Das ist ein simplifiziertes Modell davon, wie die Welt funktioniert.
As soon as we begin to present something at a pedagogical level, we need to simplify. The purpose is to say that these are two facets of knowing. You could say there are three. The key thing is to highlight walking with God as the purpose of the Christian life, learning to love God and love our neighbor. And that everything we learn has to feed into that. It's not a goal in itself. In our culture, sometimes knowledge is power. And we get our identity through what we know. Sometimes you as pastors are valued not because of your intimate walk with Christ, but because of your capacity to articulate intellectually the Christian life. Does it make sense? And we have to move where we as pastors, we as Christians, put our emphasis on walking with God, integrated with the systematic theology, not one or the other, integrated. So that sometimes I hear theologians who say, you know what, I'm not very good at prayer. Let me be honest, I hate that. It means they are good at articulating thoughts, but it's not practical. How can they be helpful to others? The Orthodox will say, is theologian the one who prays? I'm not telling you just pray your little Jesus in your room and no theology. Go for theology. But what you learn in theology, integrate in your relationship with God. So that your prayer life and your intellectual life get together. And we'll speak together also later that one of the dangers of moving away from objective knowledge is seeking experiences disconnected from reason. That's a tendency in Christianity with people where they lose control and they think it's spiritual. I think it's a very dangerous approach. You don't want to shut down reason, you just want to move it from the role of master to assistant to our relationships. Does it make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Other comments? Mary, you have a...
Ich wollte nur fragen, ob es Bücher gibt, die man junge Leute geben können, die einen Konflikt sehen zwischen Wissenschaft und Glauben. In die Schulen wird das oft so auseinandergenommen, dass einige junge Leute verlieren fast ihre Glauben am Anfang.
Yes.
Ich würde mich freuen, wenn es ein paar gute Bücher geben würde, die man weiterleiten könnte.
Okay, there are some books. It's a tricky area, extremely tricky. You have the ones who will be bashing science. You will have the ones who will pretend there is no tension. Either approach is not helpful. Pretending there is no tension, you end up with your kids becoming distant from God through their studies. And then, at one point, they are no more in church. Boom. But at the same time, to make them be the warriors of faith against objective knowledge is not helpful. We create zealots sometimes, which are not helpful. So this balance, I'm still struggling to find some of the books. Nancy Piercy in the US, more on the Reformed side, has some interesting stuff, but I don't feel the balance is what I would say. So. That's one of the reasons, I'm sorry, I would love to tell you, I hope I can write something which helps in the good direction. Perhaps you know some things, Mary. You have Collins, who wrote a book, the guy who developed the human genome, who tried to show you how evolution and the Christian faith can combine. Honestly, I was not completely convinced. Interesting. So if you want more on the unified relationship, peaceful, you go with Collins, The Language of God, the guy who was heading the genome in the US. I don't think the tension is clearly articulated and that the philosophical underpinnings are explained. It's more the, oh, the two work well together. Up to a certain point, yes. But the philosophical foundations of science have to be addressed. Which ones are they? The other side, people like Nancy Piercy, very interesting stuff. Total Truth is one of your books. A little bit too much toward blaming science. I'm thinking it's a tricky area.
Okay? Yeah,
thank you. Other comments, questions, observations? Yeah? Oh, no, sorry, I thought you... Yes, Philip?
Was mir wirklich geholfen hat, ist nicht zu sagen, das eine ist besser als das andere, sondern zu verstehen, dass, ich sag mal, nur 80% der Schrift mehr von der rechten Seite kommt. und dass unser Schriftverständnis dadurch komplett auf den Kopf gestellt werden müsste, um wirklich herauszufinden, was haben hebräische Schreiber gedacht und gefühlt, als sie die Schrift aufgeschrieben haben.
Ja.
Und ich glaube, das verändert ganz viel, wie wir die Bibel interpretieren. Mhm. Ohne zu sagen, das eine muss jetzt besser sein als das andere, aber zu verstehen, dass der jüdische Einfluss, wie wir die Bibel verstehen, hilft uns so sehr zu verstehen, was sie eigentlich sagen wollen.
Ja. Philippe, what you share, I think it's important we realize that you have a hermeneutical cycle here. When we interact with God, we want to make sense of what he says. We don't just go left or right. Sometimes, through scriptures, we get principles. But these principles are here to help us walk with God. It's a back and forth. The percentage business, depending on your stance, some people will say it's mostly objective knowledge. They will put, for instance, the Torah, Deuteronomy, they will say that's here. Others will say, no, it's relational knowledge. You have a little bit of both in scriptures. And I think it's realizing that both are helping each other is important. The integrative element is the relational knowledge. Relationships are the key. Love is more important than judgment. Judgment is a resulting element of God's love. If we get this one, we are safe. If we put judgment first we end up as Calvinists. Wesleyans, goodbye. By the way. And we end up with weird stuff. Is there double predestination and so on and so on. So. Calvin was more clever than Calvinism. When he was challenged about double predestination by his reformer colleagues in Switzerland, he shut up. He said, okay, we don't speak. He was a good biblical person, but the way it developed sometimes. I feel, yes, you have really a hermeneutical cycle kind of here, and we need to combine both. But for the moment, this one, we have not, I think, developed enough balance on this one. And we should not shift completely, but find how to develop more balanced journey. So, thank you, Philippe. Other comments? Chris?
Ja, heute Morgen habe ich mir drei Sachen als Feststellung aufgeschrieben nach deinem ersten Vortrag. Das erste war, dass ich mir die Frage gestellt habe, ob es genau aufgrund dessen, was du unterrichtest, das Relational Knowledge, einen Grund gibt, warum viele zu charismatischen Gemeinden sich hingezogen fühlen. Gerade das charismatische Bewegung ja weltweit sehr stark am Wachsen ist, weil im Grunde Menschen feststellen, also einfach nur um ein bisschen mehr Objective Knowledge in der Kirche zu bekommen, das reicht mir nicht. Ich brauche irgendwie was ich viel mehr auf meinem Gefühls- oder Erfahrungsebene im Grunde für mich wichtig ist. Zweitens, die Frage, die bei mir hochgekommen ist, wie wir das Abendmahl verstehen oder warum viele auch in unserer Kultur eigentlich gar nicht so viel anfangen können, auch Theologen und Pastoren mit dem Abendmahl, weil wir so geprägt sind von der Objective Knowledge, dass für uns im Grunde dieser Akt, gemeinsam zu essen, um den Tisch herumzukommen und Abendmahl zu feiern, eigentlich fast irgendwie distanziert von unserer Theologie uns vorkommt. Aber eigentlich mittendrin, also als Kern dessen, was wir auch als Pastor mal als Sakramente verwalten, ist ja eigentlich etwas, was erlebbar ist und sehr relational eigentlich. Also man bringt das Brot für jemand anders, man gibt etwas aus und es ist nicht, wir stehen nicht darum und küssen jetzt alle die Bibel oder irgendwie die Predigt des Pastors, sondern wir essen. Dritte Feststellung, dass in unserer Leiterentwicklung und Pastoralausbildung, das kam ja heute Morgen auch ein bisschen beim Ian raus, haben wir auch sehr stark auf Objective Knowledge Menschen hin trainiert. Also die sind die 21 Laws of Effective Leadership oder die Prinzipien, wie du ein erfolgreicher Leiter bist. Und vielleicht manchmal auch deswegen sich Leitung etwas steril anfühlt und Menschen nicht so richtig mitgehen können, weil sie wirklich nicht abgeholt werden auf der Relational Seite.
Yeah, I would say, thank you, Chris. The question of objective knowledge is impacting not only education, all our structure. You want me to speak of pastors? I'm sure you're emphasizing quite a bit the objective knowledge you have been trained for in many cases. So I would say it's not a question of trying to find who to blame, but how can we move forward together? And at all the levels, I think you are touched in your life. I just have to mention a few words. Perfectionism. Do you have people struggling with that? Well, perfectionism is a consequence of a too strong focus on what's right. You have people who pray left or right. They don't pray about Jesus, do you love me, as Jan spoke, but what shall I do? Like, if God take control. So we have this challenge to shift. Yes, education has to be part, but beyond education, it's people. Education is what the teachers are. And I'm working with colleagues like Klaus, that hopefully we journey together. And Klaus has heard me push, saying we need to be more in the relational side. Did I mention it, Klaus?
Oui.
And I have to do it in a respectful way, because what I'm speaking about is a journey. And honestly, I don't have all the answers. I just sense, as you said, Chris, we need to make a shift. But the best shifts will not be total shifts, but progressive ones, where we use the experimental method. You will hear me speak of experimental method. It's through experimental method that we will slowly adapt. For instance, we were with Klaus Arnold in Macedonia last year. We showed to the teachers how to integrate an interactive prayer, intimacy with God, in the classroom. First, for the teachers to experiment, and I told them, well, friends, I have no absolute method. You saw a few possible approaches. I challenge you. Test it in the classroom. Because we cannot write a book telling people how to do that. It needs to be a journey for each teacher. But it needs to be a journey for you as pastors also. We are all persons in process to become more Christ-like, to live this walk with the Father. So for the third point, yes, you're right, education, we have to work on it. But let's be honest, in our structure, which works in silos, we tend to be playing the blame game. We try to look who is guilty. Education. And then education says, oh, look at the local church. And then the local church says, look at my leader. And all over, we can play the blame game, or we can say, you know what? If there is something we have to work on, let's work on it together. There is a strong cultural element which has touched us, not always realizing how deep this has influenced the way we live the Christian faith. So my hope is journeying together. You mentioned a point about charismatism, saying, oh yes, we push here. I've been speaking with quite a few friends. Even in Kansas City, I befriended prophets. I found it fun to discuss with them. And I love to interact with people of different confessions. What I noticed is my charismatic friends at one point always come back to, if you want a deeper relationship with Christ, you need to practice speaking in tongues a long time. Speaking in tongues is not in the relational knowledge. It's still a technique to get insights. You don't know what's happening at a reason level. Speaking in tongues, the intellect is not involved. Is it from God? Is it not from God? I will not enter into this debate. I will say, Paul advised very wisely that we should not focus, if we speak of spiritual gifts, on speaking in tongues. Which gift did Paul advise us to focus on?
Prophecy.
Prophecy is about understanding what God says to us and doing it. That's a healthy pathway, which for years now I've been speaking with colleagues saying, friends, that's the pathway which is healthy for our Wesleyan understanding. Not the prophecy with the prophet in front who speaks to everyone to tell them their secrets. That's at best old-time Moses-style prophecy. New Testament prophecy is intimacy with God, which leads us to encourage each other with words which will be a blessing to each other, focused on love, on humility. This kind of prophecy, I believe, could transform our churches as we develop that and it becomes part of the DNA which is intimately connected with the way we understand faith as Wesleyans. So that's on the charismatic side. Paradoxically, I pray with people to help them to listen to Jesus. It's a foolish endeavor. I cannot help people, but Jesus likes that I pray with people to help them. And it seems some people are helped through the process. My experience is my charismatic friends don't necessarily hear God. I had a friend in South Africa who was PhD, who was trained in a Pentecostal church. He practiced speaking in tongues regularly, but he did not know how to experience God. We prayed together. He saw himself in heaven. And the next day, he hears God tell him, go to the doctor. He says, no, I have my class to give at the university. Go to the doctor. He goes to the doctor. He learns that he has a blood clot, and he avoided his death by just a thread. I can tell you he was convinced. That was a quite motivating experience for him. To realize God does speak. Paradoxically, neither the charismatic church nor the non-charismatic has focused on this combination between reason and relationship. That's a paradox. Some colleagues in the charismatic church slowly are moving in this direction also. In the non-charismatic churches, some are moving also. But we have to readjust. And I believe it's something we need to learn to dialogue about and to model ourselves experimenting, journeying together toward a healthy integration in our own lives. For the Lord's Supper, the relational element, I'm sorry, I don't think I understood all what you shared, Chris, but yes, there is a strong relational part. It's experimenting the presence of Christ in the Lord's Supper, which is key. If I go, I'm a Frenchman who studied for 7 years in Switzerland, so let me use Calvin on this one. Calvin was one of the most balanced reformers on the question of the Lord's Supper. He said, I don't bother about whether it's symbolic, like Zwingli said. I believe that Jesus says, that's my body, I believe it. So when I come to the Lord's Supper, he expected an encounter with Christ. But then he struggled with Zwingli, who forced him out of this position, which was balanced. So it's an encounter which is at stake in the Lord's Supper to experiment God's grace, God's presence. So I believe there can be a strong relational element in the Lord's Supper. Is it in the direction what you were mentioning, Chris? I'm not sure I understood.
Well, I can just phrase it in English quickly. And that is, I feel like even the way we've been trained as pastors is that we've been trained in the objective knowledge, is we've distanced ourselves even as we experience something. Mm-hmm. That way, even the Lord's Supper can be void because we're so heavy on our head. We miss the moment, the relational moment of what's actually happening because we're so head knowledge people. And so I think there's even a transformation in our practices. I mean, we administer the sacraments, that's our role as pastors. But it's kind of detached because we've been so much leaning towards objective knowledge that, you know, we pass the bread, but we don't even see it as a relational exchange.
Yeah, that's a good point. Tomorrow we will move toward more experimental ways to show you it's kind of schematic, but it's kind of what we call left brain, right brain, this business. Let's be honest, the brain does not work in such a compartmentalized way, but it helps us to realize. And one of the exercises I develop is to help people to shift between the objective to the relational side. One of the key helps is to use our imagination. And we are underdeveloped concerning our imagination. We can discuss of cultural influences, television, learning to be observers of images and not using our imagination to interact. That can be a help for pastors. Tomorrow we'll do exercises, hopefully helping in this direction, Chris. But that's a very good point.
Let me be honest, I'm a little bit afraid of your experiments that you're advertising. Just saying.
Yes. Good. I'm happy because experiments involve risks, so I'm happy I have some fears.
Yeah.
Because...
That's enough, but okay.
That's good. Any comment on this?
Yeah.
Other comments, observations? Yes.
I can say it in English so you understand. So I had two observations this morning. One was handling of problems, especially on a large scale. For example, dealing with a crisis of refugees in Europe. How often in political debates it's all about objective knowledge. Because if we know enough about the problem, we hope it gives us a clue to finding the solution. Whereas in our experience in ministry, for what I've experienced in the last month, is a lot about a relational knowledge, which we don't have. Because the fear of encountering this unknown stops us from actually finding a solution to that. And my question is how a church in general, and we as pastors, balance that well. Because there is a need for objective knowledge,
yeah. But
there's also a question how to practice relational knowledge in bringing a solution to the problems.
Yeah. That's a good point, and it links with the struggle of Ian to answer to their questions about the prayer room this morning. Reality leads you to complex situations where you don't always have a clear-cut A or B. That's where your prayer life will lead you to try and take risks, which means you can be wrong. And accepting you can be wrong is a key part in the journey, not to make stupid choices, but to pray. And we will discuss together, Chris mentioned a little bit the Wesleyan quadrilateral, we'll speak a little bit about that, how we need safeguards for the encounters to be fruitful. Principles. We'll speak of scriptures, tradition, reason, common sense, which will help us like shepherds to bring back our thinking when we are getting in crazy ways. But the shepherds are not able to guide us. We need the great shepherd, Jesus, to help us. These assistants are helping us to avoid crazy directions. To say, oh, let's transform our church in a mosque, and we'll speak of Issa, and we'll highlight whatever. You pick the crazy things you want. But yes, you have a challenge, and my sense is the struggle is part of the relational journey. We tend to want to remove difficulties. If I have the right answer, then all the problems disappear. Well, Jesus, he got the right answer the day of Gethsemane about what he was supposed to do. Did it remove all the struggles? He needed to take the cup. Did he then say, yuppie, I got the right way to handle the next day? No, the struggle remained. Often, we tend to evacuate the struggle which is part of the Christian walk. Does it make sense?
Yes.
So I will say, I would love to tell you there is a wonderful way to pray when Jesus tells you left, but you will have to discern with God. You will have to listen to others, because God speaks not only when we pray alone, but through others, and it's a journey of learning. But your point is right. We tend to have cultures which have put the magisterium to reason. Still, in many places. In the French culture, we had a clever idea to help people to get it. At the Revolution, we put a statue of the goddess Reason in the churches, just in case people did not get it, you know? Happily, it did not work very long. So yes, there is struggle, but a very important struggle. This is where God shapes our lives and transforms this world.
So, one last question. Yeah. So, would you say that post-modernity is actually a blessing because it helps us with this?
You have the pros and cons. You have a positive element in post-modernity toward more relationships. You have a curse, which is a rejection of objective knowledge, where they want that, but they don't want that. That's a curse. The blessing is they value this one. So in some ways, I would say it's a blessed curse. Yes?
Just kind of one answer in English too, because I'm
thank you for letting me raise my German.
Because I'm American, I'm just going to thank you first. This has been super helpful. Yeah. Now I'm going to ask a question.
Okay, go for your criticism. Don't worry.
Thanks so much, Steve.
I'm not maybe as mean, but anyway. Kind of making objective and relational kind of two poles, I kind of find unhelpful. And the reason being is that the objective side that things toward kind of the cognitive and reason and we're discovering everything, I think is actually not contrasted with relational as much as a purely subjective knowledge.
Okay.
So, and my point with that is most people in my church who are kind of either on the fringe of church or kind of coming in for the first time don't really struggle with objective knowledge. Mm-hmm. They struggle with how the idea of following Jesus makes them feel.
Yes.
Or what feels good. Mm-hmm. And I see relational knowledge as more of an integration of the two.
Yes.
Where we're encountering a reality that's beyond us.
Yes.
And yet we can still participate in that reality.
Yeah.
So I just find positing the two against each other.
Okay.
A little bit maybe unhelpful for where culture actually is today.
Okay. It's true that relational knowledge is an attempt to bring a more balanced view, which can integrate rational. Let me show you a word play I do. We should not remove rational knowledge. We should bring back God. El is one of the names of God in the Old Testament. Bring him back in the picture toward relational knowledge. Kind of the direction you're mentioning. The challenge with the objective-subjective is this definition always bashes the subjective to promote the objective. In some ways, you don't have an opposition, you have a primacy of objective on the subjective knowledge, although with postmodernism some people value it. I would not go for subjective knowledge. I don't think it would be healthy for me to promote that.
No, I'm not saying promote it. I'm just saying you're talking about moving from purely objective to a relational thing.
Yeah.
Because of our context in the West. And I think today there also needs to be discussion amongst churches.
Yeah.
How do we move people from a purely subjective way of knowledge also to a relational?
Exactly. Here we don't speak of subjective knowledge. One of the reasons I use these two terms, remind me your name?
Danny.
Danny, it's because you have biblical concepts behind. Relational, it's yada. Being, it's objective. And Proverbs does oppose these two. And you can find the two opposed when God says, my plans are not your plans.
That's not a right way to argue this case.
Okay.
I'm arguing in a very objective way. You're taking a verse in scripture and basically saying, this objectively says what and is proving my point. You can't do that.
Okay.
I think my point, it's not even really a disagreement as much as saying that another side needs to be spoken of. Those two things are at conflict, but there's another thing on the other side, relational knowledge is also conflicting with.
Yes.
That's pure phenomenal thinking, where I'm just feeling and experiencing
without
anything outside of myself.
That's a good point. So you could add three columns.
That's
objective, relational, and subjective, kind of. The way direction of relational would be more healthy, kind of.
Yes, that's the middle point. Because when I disciple my people, I'm not really struggling with objective knowledge. I'm struggling with phenomenal.
Thank you. Thanks. That's a good point, Jan?
I think I have to flee now.
Put your stones down, people.